Garden State Debate, where the talk is real. Garden State Debate, no joke, no frills. Garden State Debate, it's the talk of the town. Garden State Debate, for people all around, yeah. Garden State Debate,
Garden State Debate,
Garden State Debate.
My name's Ryan, and welcome back to Garden State Debate, video cast and podcast. I'm very excited today to bring back our friends from Atlantic Health Network, and more specifically, Overlook Medical Center. For those of you who have followed along over the last 6 months or so, our first guest on the show was actually the Chief Medical Officer of Overlook Medical Center, Dr. Audette, who joined us to talk to us about COVID-19 and kind of how the origins of it coming to New Jersey and our region, and how Overlook Medical Center and the Atlantic Health Network kind of went through the process of treating and handling the virus here in New Jersey. And it was a very educational very dynamic discussion. So I suggest everyone tune into that. But we're very fortunate to have with us today Dr. Angell, who is the chair of the Department of Medicine at Overlook Medical Center. And I'll let her give a little background in a minute on what that means. But just for those who don't know, Overlook Medical Center is named one of the America's 50 best hospitals in 2021 by HealthGrades. And one of the world's best hospitals by Newsweek, and recognized as a best regional hospital in the New York metro area by US News and World Report for the 10th consecutive year here in 2021. So a very highly regarded medical center here in New Jersey, happens to be quite local to where I am. So with that, I'd just like to welcome Dr. Angell. Welcome to the show. Thanks for coming back on, or thanks for joining us. And how are you doing today?
I'm good, and thank you for having me on. I will hope to live up to a fraction of what Dr. Audette did for you. Really happy to be here. So, I'm the chair of medicine here at Overlook. The Department of Medicine is probably the largest department in the hospital and in most hospitals. So most of the organ systems that you think of, the doctors that take care of those organ systems, like your heart doctor, your lung doctor, your kidney doctor, your oncologist or cancer doctor, all of those roll up into the Department of Medicine. So it's a fairly large department, and I'm really lucky to help lead it.
Excellent. So it sounds like you're pretty busy. Also, I think it was mentioned earlier that you, by nature, were a hospitalist. Is that?
Yeah, so I'm still a practicing doc. I will always be a practicing doc. And I do hospital medicine. So I take care of our sick patients in the hospital, otherwise known as a hospitalist. So keeps me on my toes. And for the last year, has kept me at the front lines of COVID.
Excellent. Thank you for that. So I was hoping today that we can discuss kind of where we left off with Dr. Audette was kind of heading into the winter and the fall. Well, we spoke in the fall, heading into the winter, what we might be expecting to see. So maybe we can kind of touch base on, the beginning of the spring of 2020 versus the quote unquote second wave that we saw in cases and anything along those lines as it relates to Overlook Medical Center and relative to the first time, the first wave. And then maybe we can segue into vaccines, what's out there, common questions, where Overlook and Atlantic Health is at as it relates to vaccines. And then from there, from what I understand, Atlantic Health just released basically they are now testing for COVID variants, some of the UK variant and a couple others. So hopefully you can maybe educate us on what that test is like, what's in it, and the process and what we know about that. Sure. Does that sound good?
Absolutely.
All right, cool. So if you could, if you don't mind just taking a couple minutes, you know, like I said, we were heading into to the winter when we spoke to Dr. Audette, and we were hoping for a very low and case count and all that stuff, but it seemed to be tick up a little higher. So maybe you can fill us in on how Overlook saw that and
sure. So I would say spring 2020 versus spring 2021 is night and day. So obviously the community cases are still quite high on both sides of those years. But the effects on the hospital and the hospitalized patients is really, again, night and day. So in the beginning, and I think Jack referenced this a lot, is we saw, you know, really a rapid rise in COVID cases in the hospital. It kind of felt like a tsunami at some points where we had a lot of really sick patients coming to our hospitals for care. And this was a completely new or novel disease. You know, we know what coronavirus is, but this type of coronavirus was unlike anything we had seen, even probably a little bit different than SARS, which is related to it. And so we didn't have a lot of options as far as treatment and therapies to get patients as we do today. Luckily, even though the community cases are so high, we're not seeing as big a number in the hospital. And although we did see I think our hospital president calls it a wavelet. Nice. We did see a rise in cases in the hospital. It, again, was nowhere near those levels. We are able to treat many more patients in the community now. With the monoclonal antibodies. So for our very high risk patients that we want to prevent hospitalizations now, we can treat some of those patients in the community. And Atlantic has been doing that locally at all of our sites. So it is a nice offering to be able to offer something to high risk patients to try to help prevent them from coming into the hospital. I do believe they're quoting 94% of the patients that have received this therapy have not come to the hospital. So we've been able to keep them safe and monitor them on the outside. For those that unfortunately had to be hospitalized, the vast majority are going home. So that's a really different story than the spring. So really good news. You know, we have other therapies we can give in the hospital now, between the Decadron steroids and the antivirals, something called remdesivir. And Atlantic's actually part of many research trials. So we actually also have the ability to give many of our patients therapies that they may not have options to otherwise. You know, we've really been able to keep our footprint of COVID contained in the hospital. We actually, kudos to all our environmental and engineering folk, because on the drop of a hat, they built an entirely new unit. So we have a new unit that we were building in the summer in prep for the second wave, in anticipation that it would come. We didn't know what was going to happen, but we knew we were going to be prepared. We weren't going to not be prepared. So we built a contained unit where many of our COVID patients that require critical care or even just general medical care are taken care of by a team that can focus on their care. So the rest of the hospitals remained COVID-free. And we've seen a lot of patients come back to the hospital and have confidence to continue to get the care they need, because that was not the case in the beginning. And it's still a little bit lacking, you know. So I think the message to our community really needs to be, if you need general medical care, do not delay it. Do not delay your cancer screenings. Do not delay anything, because, you know, doing that will lead to a different type of pandemic in the future. So.
Right. No, that's really helpful. It's good to hear that the actual capacity and of the hospital, which I think was widely known as the biggest concern of our hospitals in the region, and going into the winter months, that there was other alternatives available to not only keep people healthy and return them home, but not even necessarily need to bring them into the hospital. So that's really interesting. And then that new building that you spoke about, we talked about a little before the show, but that is that 7 East, and it was intended for a different practice, and it was basically just pivoted into a COVID only. Is that right?
Yeah. So as the hospital is starting construction projects to reinvent itself, I suppose, that was dedicated to be a neuroscience center for inpatients that require high-level neuroscience care. They're still getting that high-level neuroscience care where they currently are, but that was planned to be revamped. But for the temporary purposes, we've used it for a focused COVID unit, and it's really impressive how they thought through all the little details, really not sparing any type of technology or things to protect both our patients and our staff. So they were really quite smart about how they developed it to keep everyone safe.
That's great. And just from a perspective of the hospital layout, is the majority of COVID patients in that facility now, and the rest of the hospital, like you said, is open for business and doing everything that it.
Yeah, so we have it pretty much located in two isolated areas. So 7 East being one, fairly isolated from most of the rest of the hospital. And then our very top floor, our 10th floor, is also our COVID unit. Short of that, we've been able to operate business as usual elsewhere.
That's great, because going back to our first conversation with Dr. Audet, he was telling us a lot about converted floors and things like that on the fly. So it's good, as you said, the preparation and the amount of detail that went into designing and preparing for the wavelet or the ripple or whatever we're going to call it. Is that sounds great. So that kind of takes us up to now. And I think a lot of, you know, the public talk, at least from what I hear, is about vaccines, and seems like obviously similar to COVID and getting tested and early on and in the spring of 2020 and in the beginning of 2021, there was obviously a high demand in for vaccinations and things like that. So maybe you can fill us in on kind of the start of the vaccination rollout, at least at Overlook and from the beginning of the year, maybe even slightly prior to now. And then we can talk a little bit about each of the vaccines that are available and maybe some other questions.
Sure. So, I mean, I think the year 2020 into 2021, it's a remarkable year to live through for many reasons, but one of them really being the acceleration of science in a very robust and safe way. That being said, I tell people very honestly, if you had asked me in the summer of 2020, even in the fall before the vaccines had come out and the data, I could look at it with my own eyes and analyze it and really understand it. If you had asked me if I was gonna get vaccinated, I would have taken a pretty big pause. I wouldn't have said no, but I wasn't gonna be like, oh, I'll sign up first. But that being said, I did sign up first. I was apparently one of the first in all of Atlantic to get it. And that was by choice, really because I was able to look at the technology. I was able to look at the data and the studies and how they conducted it. And really there was no shortcuts here. So I think everybody's fear is, how did we get here so fast, right? And did they take shortcuts? And, you know, is this safe? And all of those really valid questions. But the reason we got here so fast is really multifold, right? So you had government helping to support scientists, right? And pharmaceutical companies who were studying this, right, and taking a lot of those red tape barriers, right? So let's take out all the paperwork, you know, not paperwork as far as safety, but kind of take out all the frustrations typically people have when they're bringing a new drug to market. Then the entire world was studying this, right? So we had data from before, from prior pandemics that were similar. So I referenced SARS a little bit. And we had good data about the first two vaccines that came out. You know, everybody thinks this mRNA technology, which is Pfizer and Moderna, is new. This has been being studied since 1990. Right? Like we've known about this technology and studying it since the 90s. So we have decades and decades of research. What we didn't have research on was mass vaccination using this, right? So that is kind of the newness of it. But they had to follow all those same rules to get any drug out to market or vaccine out to market. They had to follow them. In fact, the FDA said, we're not even willing to entertain your data until you've surpassed this timeline. And they did, right? And the data is really remarkable. I mean, I think the data was much better than any of us could have really expected. These vaccines are highly effective. Go ahead.
Can we talk a little bit about the data, at least as it relates to Moderna and Pfizer, from again, a layman's, my personal knowledge of it, the people that talk about it, they ask, you know, which one did you get? You know, we know that one is, you know, the second dose is a little bit later, but relative to each other, are there differences? Is there anything different in the actual vaccine? Is there more in, you know, the first shot than the second? How much are you vaccinated after round one? Things like that would be interesting to hear. And then I think you kind of alluded to it, but the efficacy rates of them, as far as the studies, I'm assuming it made you feel pretty comfortable about it. So maybe you could talk about that as well.
Yeah. So the good news is at this point in our lives, we have both study data and we have real world data. And the two together are really, really powerful. So the first two that came out were what we call the mRNA vaccines. That's Moderna and Pfizer. And to be honest, there's really little difference in their side effects, in how they work, in their efficacy or how well they work. So they're both excellent vaccines. And I actually have people come to me all the time and say, you know, which one should I get? Like, if I had the choice, which one should I get? Because I think I can get the choice. I was like, get the first one you can get into your arm. Really, that's the main thing to think about. So mRNA is something actually that naturally lives in our body. So it's not foreign. Our body manufactures it. So our body knows this. It's not something new or foreign to us. So the shot injects this mRNA, and the mRNA in our bodies naturally acts as a recipe. So, you know, it injects the recipe, our body reads that recipe, creates the spike protein. So when you kind of see those cartoon pictures of COVID, with the spikes and the ball, it creates a portion of that spike protein, okay? Our body then recognizes it and says, this is not supposed to be here, right? I'm going to start to build defenses against this thing I don't recognize. So those are our antibodies, right? So it revs up your antibody and your immune system to build fighting machines so that if it does see COVID, it remembers what it looks like and it can attack it right away, as opposed to letting the disease kind of possess your body or infiltrate your body. The second shot is the same exact shot, okay? So there's no difference in doses. It's just what we call a booster, okay? So because this is so new to our bodies, our body needs a trigger to remember again, okay? So you get the first one, it's priming your system. It's priming your engine, right? It's revving up those antibodies. That second one, it's like, oh wait, I really remember this guy. Let me really rev up and build even more antibody and memory against this guy. And our body actually stores that memory in the background. So even if we don't see COVID for a while, it's gonna remember. And as soon as it sees it, all those memory cells, all those memory antibodies kind of come out fighting. So that's kind of the basic technology of how it works. Any questions on that piece?
No, it raised a couple other questions that I had though on, sure. So you mentioned like the second one's kind of a booster and mm-hmm. people talk about the potential need for future boosters, right? And I don't know if we can compare it to the flu vaccine or anything else, but obviously a vaccine doesn't stay in your body, from what I understand, for your entire life. So is there any kind of scientific studies on when further boosters might be needed?
So we don't know. Obviously the scientific community is actively studying that right now, and it's too early to have that answer. And I often hear when, you know, it's hard to, there's so much media out there and how to interpret it. And, exactly. you know, when the media came out that it's effective for 6 months, people are like, well, what's the point? I have to get it every 6 months. But that's misinterpretation, right? We know it's effective on at least through 6 months, right? And more than likely much longer, right? We just don't know. We haven't had these long enough, but our study volunteers are actually going to be monitored for a few years. So we will have that data. And as far as booster is concerned, I do think we probably will require boosters in the future. The problem is you don't know whether it's a year, you know, 2 years, 5 years down the line. And especially with our variants, which I think we'll talk about a little bit later in our discussion, they're actually actively studying boosters that treat the variants. So.
Got it. Yeah.
That's good news.
Right. And I just wonder if it, and we don't know the answer to this, I'm sure. So just rhetorically, if it'll become a part of like the regular seasonal vaccination plan, that if someone goes and gets their flu vaccine, maybe they'll end up doing both. But
it's very likely. They right. just don't know the answer.
Got it. And a question that around what, you know, people know, a lot of folks now who have gotten the vaccine, like we spoke about, side effects. Have you guys seen any major side effects, or what are normal side effects? And does it happen to be have any pattern? Also, it seems like side effects are, from what I hear again, are more prevalent in after the second shot. Is there a certain reason? If that's true, is that you would think after the first time your body takes it in, it would have the initial reaction just from a non-scientific, mm-hmm. you know, common sense, but maybe you can talk a little bit about side effects, what you see, what's normal, sure. First, second.
Sure. So for these two, and again, I don't know if you mentioned or I did not mention, so for Pfizer, it's a 3 week time frame between the two, and for Moderna, it's a 4 week, so 28 days. The reason you have more side effects on the second shot is that same reason that your body's revving up more, right? So the first shot, it like doesn't really recognize this thing, and it's building up some immune response, which is why you need that second shot to boost up that immune response even larger, right? So that you get to the 95% efficacy or prevention rate, right, that they quote in the studies. And real world, actually, we do have real world data in these two studies. It's about 90%. It's in that range, you know, very high 80s to 90%. So even in real world studies, it's looking good. So your body's recognizing it a second time, which is why you have those side effects. Interestingly, if you've had COVID before, a lot of patients who have had COVID before, their body obviously recognizes COVID. So that first shot almost acts like a booster, right? And a lot of those patients have side effects on their first shot, not so much on their second shot all the time.
If you had COVID, you had the first shot, and that's an interesting point that you just made. I think I've read something that said that the second shot could actually have a negative impact on your antibodies. Is that true or is that
No. Okay. No, it's only the, you know, obviously not always more is better, but it's
right.
Just,
yeah. I
mean, yeah. There's no studies to say that there's any negative effect. They are looking whether if you've had COVID in the past, whether you only need one because it's acting as a booster, but that second shot is not negative.
Right. Okay. Understood.
And as far as we didn't really get into the side effects. So I think, 50% of people should expect side effects, right? Something, right? Because that's what the study showed, and that's probably what our real world shows. But these side effects are very mild for the most part, right? We're talking about a sore arm. We're talking about body aches. We're talking about, for some people, you know, 10%, 10, 15% of patients will actually land themselves in bed because they feel crummy, right? And generally for the vast majority of patients, the side effects will last 24, 48 hours. And those side effects, I guarantee you, are better than COVID. Because right. Even for people that get mild COVID, we're seeing they're still having what's called long COVID, a chunk of them, right? And it's not an insignificant number where they still have side effects from COVID. So I think anything you get as far as these, you know, low grade fevers, body aches, chills, you know, it's something you can treat with hopefully Tylenol or Motrin or Advil, or, you know, I try not to use trade names, but it's easier. you know, easily treatable with those medications if you're allowed to take them normally. So, and then as far as J&J, we didn't really talk about that one.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that.
Yeah, so that vaccine is very is a bit different as far as the technology. Again, being studied for a very long time as well, and there are other vaccines using similar technology. So you know, your tried and true vaccine that you have a what we call a deactivated or a dead bug. It's not a live virus. None of these vaccines can give you COVID because none of them have live or dead COVID in them. This one uses the common cold, something called adenovirus. And it can't give you the cold because it's not a working virus. And it does very similar things it doesn't use mRNA, it uses a DNA. And it creates that recipe for that protein again, that spike protein. And the same type of reaction happens. Your body recognizes it. It builds defenses or antibodies against it. The difference for this shot, it's a one-time shot. Now, J&J is studying two shots, but what's out right now is a one-time shot. So it's one and done, which is really nice. The other really nice thing about it is it doesn't require those crazy storage requirements for the other two. So the other two they have to be kept quite cold, like frigid temperatures. Whereas this one, you can store in a doctor's office, you can store in a pharmacy, you can store, and it has a shelf life that's much longer. So it really has a good role in the vaccine fight and the COVID fight. And it has similar side effects for the most part. You know, the headaches, the body aches, the fevers, you know, the landing yourself in bed for a day. You know, they haven't looked at them head to head, so you can't really compare virus vaccines.
Got it. And we talked about this briefly before. I don't know how much information is out there or is anecdotal, but obviously the supply has been kind of cut off, right? Due to some, what looks like very uncommon side effects or actually a couple of deaths. But is there any more information on that? I mean, is it being paused?
Sure. So you're talking about J&J specifically. Pfizer and Moderna continue to roll out and continue to, you know, we're getting those shots in arms. And actually for Atlantic in particular, that those are the two major vaccines that we've been using. So everywhere in the news right now is the CDC and FDA statement asking for a pause on J&J vaccines. And I know, you know, this seems really, really scary, right? Because it all of a sudden we have this vaccine that we thought was great. And now, you know, six people had a significant side effect, possibly. We don't know exactly if it's related to the vaccine, but the really, really positive thing here is the system worked, right? So people are really vaccine hesitant because they're afraid of the unknown. The beauty is we have a monitoring system that works really, really well when significant side effects are around, right? So, you know, everybody should be reporting their side effects through the CDC. It's something called the vaccine reporting. It's an app, actually. You can just download it and report your symptoms daily. But for things like this that are super, super rare that you would not see in a trial because you just don't have enough people to see something so rare in a trial, the system worked. It said, wait, we see something here that might be relevant. So let's take a pause, right? Let's investigate this further for safety. And let's make sure that we're not giving this to people until we know a little bit more information. So that's exactly what the CDC and the FDA did. They did their job. The system worked, right? And I think we have to keep this all in context. This was 6 patients in almost 7 million. So it's less than a 1 in million chance of this happening, okay? And we know the patient population that it's happened in. In fact, this is very similar to AstraZeneca in the European vaccination campaign. And it's a rare blood clotting disorder. And it's not the typical blood clots that you hear about in just your legs and you get put on a blood thinner. It's a bit different. And it's associated with what we call a low platelet count. So those are your sticky cells. And then a blood clot that typically can happen anywhere, but we're seeing it really in the brain. It is treatable for the most part, but we treat it in a very different way than we may have unrelated to this. My guess is what's gonna happen is over the next couple of weeks, I don't think this is gonna be a long pause, is they're gonna isolate a patient population that they may not, similar probably to Europe, that they're not gonna give it to our young females, because that's where we're really seeing it, at least in the US. Young females have been the ones that have had this issue. So I do think there is still a role. I do still think it's a good vaccine. I do think our system is working, and I know people are scared, especially if they just got it. But really, this is like less than a 1 in 1,000,000 chance. So I would try not to lose sleep over it. I know that's easier said than done when it's still right. So new. But
it's relatively new compared to the other two that you spoke about. So, but still, like you said, so many millions were administered. Does Atlantic Health or Overlook have any experience with the blood clotting side effect that was reported?
We have had no cases to my knowledge here. And I think I would have probably heard about it. Right. We have had no cases here. And J&J tends to be a very small portion of the vaccines we give out, mostly from a supply issue perspective. So the vast majority of shots that we're giving are still Moderna and Pfizer. So it shouldn't really impact our vaccine campaign too much. Although obviously the more vaccines you have, the faster you can get them out into the community.
Right. I want to talk about how, in a minute, how Atlantic Health and Overlook have been doing that and rolling it out and like the logistical part. But just a couple other questions real quick on the actual vaccine and that people seem to be asking is like after you get that second shot, you wait a certain amount of weeks before you're technically it's fully immersed in your body. Is that true? And like how long is it? And another common question would be, can you get COVID or have you seen it? At the hospital after you get the second shot, or even in between, are you seeing it in between the two?
So definitely in between is probably your highest risk. I think people think the shot makes them a bit invincible sometimes. and it does. In certain ways, it protects you. Even just the one shot protects you after 2 weeks, not right away, right? But after 2 weeks, it has some protection and a decent amount of protection, just not enough. And that's why you need that second shot, right? The problem is, yes, we're quoting 90% effective, 95% effective, even let's say worst case scenario in the 80s, right? When you have so much COVID in the community, meaning the incidence is so high, you know, your risk obviously goes up, right? So nothing is 100%, right? And we know it's 90% effective. So you still have like a 10% chance of getting it, even if you got the vaccine. And we're seeing that, right? So that's not unexpected, right? Nothing in the world is 100% effective. And if somebody tries to sell you that, you should probably go the other way, right? But that being said, for the vast majority of cases that we're seeing that are getting COVID after full vaccination and what we call immunity. And that's the 2 week point after your last shot. The disease is fairly mild. So it's similar to probably actually a little bit better. It's similar to when you get the flu vaccine and you get the flu, but it's a milder case than you would have typically gotten. You know, I think these vaccines are probably a bit stronger in the sense, you know, so it's hopefully even if you get the disease, it's pretty mild.
And how about from a carrier perspective? So let's say, you know, you have a bunch of people that are vaccinated, it's been 2 months or a month, and then they're around other people that aren't. Is the carrying aspect also a low percentage, or if you're vaccinated, it's just really protecting yourself, but you can still be a carrier to a certain degree.
Yeah. So, you know, we're going to continue to have more and more data every, you know, few months, right? And we do have some data on this now. So when they first rolled out, we had zero data on this, really, or very little data. I won't say zero. Now we do know that they actually reduce what we call asymptomatic disease, meaning you're just carrying it and you could be spreading it and you don't even know, right? So it is effective in kind of preventing spread as well as preventing getting COVID. So those are two, it's now again, nothing's 100%. And because like we talked about, the disease is so like common in our communities, like, you know, it's raging right now in many parts of this country, but New Jersey and New York in particular have always been hot spots. So we have to kind of do all the things that we were supposed to do anyway right now, right? Even if you got vaccinated, you really still have to mask in public. You have to mask around unvaccinated people. You have to wash your hands. You should try to keep distance. You know, all those things, you know, are really, really important in this period right now because the disease is so high. Does that mean this is what our life is going to look like forever? Absolutely not, right? So as cases really, really reduce down and it's at a low level in the community, then we can get back to life, you know, slowly, and we have to kind of do it in measured sequence, but absolutely, you will not have to mask for the rest of your life. And I hope if somebody's quoting me, I'm absolutely right. I'm hoping, but you know,
I hope you're right.
We just have to do it now, right? We can't let our guard down and let the disease continue, especially because of variants as they're starting to rise.
Yeah, and we'll talk about that in a second. Just a couple more things real quick on the vaccines. Are you seeing anything else out there? Obviously, maybe not approved for the US, but I'm sure there's a lot going on in that space that Atlantic Health or Overlook is looking at potentially down the road or in the near future.
Absolutely. So there are a number of vaccine, I'll call them candidates, coming out or being studied. Some are actually approved in the rest of the world already, but are not approved in the US. AstraZeneca, I mentioned. A few of the other countries have developed their own. And probably in the US, the next one you're going to see is something called Novavax. So I anticipate that'll probably come out, you know, maybe in this early summer. I haven't seen any data on it yet. So, you know, we can't really comment on how good or bad it is. I mean, there's the like press release data, but to be honest, you want to see the what's called peer review data, right? So that's when kind of scientists that are not involved in the studies review the data and assure that everything looks all right. So that one will probably be coming out next.
Okay, that's interesting, helpful to know. And you talked a bit about, you know, going forward, if you get the vaccine, although you're somewhat invisible, you still have to practice with all the common things that I think are embedded in our brains by now. In terms of
it feels like a superpower, and I kept joking, I'm like, I'm waiting for my super spidey senses. and it is, it's like, you know, but you just have to be really careful still. Just, you know, again, we don't want to lose in the like last inning, right?
Right. And then the last thing on the vaccination front, just so we talked about it like in general and the different actual vaccines and side effects and things like that. But from an Overlook Atlantic Health perspective, how are you guys administering them? Has it changed? Is it more at the hospital or out in communities? And obviously it seems to be ramping up, right? In the last several weeks to a month. Exactly.
Absolutely. So, you know, we want to get out into our communities to vaccinate our communities. We want to come to them rather than them having to come to us. So actually locally in town, we're at the center downtown where we're vaccinating, and we're, I believe, set to hit our 25,000th vaccination on Friday. So that's exciting news. So that's just in our small kind of pod here. And Atlantic as a total has administered over 334,000 vaccinations across the health system. You know, we have a mega site as well. So we really are trying to get out into the community rather than people having to trek to the hospitals.
Right. Now that makes a lot of sense. Similar to what you were saying earlier about kind of the second ripple of COVID and getting out in the community and helping people, individuals in their homes or in other venues, yeah. From a capacity standpoint. That's great to hear. So just to transition to our last kind of subject here, the recent news, I saw the press release that Atlantic Health is now able to test for some of the variants. So maybe you can walk us through what that is. What are the variant, like what are the variants that are being tested for? Seems like a very, maybe not a new concept, but pretty cutting edge for to be able to test for it here in New Jersey. So if you don't mind, can you tell us a little bit about?
Sure, so it's essentially, we should look at it as another kind of tool in our tool belt, right? So the way you're gonna crush this disease, and you know, it's gonna be low level in the community because it's just not gonna ever go away, but you want it to a level where it just kind of feels like the common flu, hopefully, right? And the only way to get out of this pandemic is to hit it at multiple angles, right? So the first is doing all the things we talked about as far as protecting ourselves and others with masking and all that. The second is testing for COVID, right? That can't go away. That has to be at the forefront, and we equally have to do that, just like everything else, right? And Atlantic has done a really great job of developing all the technology we need kind of in-house, so we're not depending on others. And the turnaround time there is 24 hours generally. Oftentimes you're getting your result in the same day you're testing. So that's really, really good news, right? Because you need that information to get to the patient quickly to help protect them and protect others. Then you have the vaccination campaign that we talked about. And then the last kind of tool is variant testing, right? And why is variant testing important? It's important from a public health perspective. It may not be important to the individual patient, although we all have curious minds and curious minds want to know, but to the public health efforts of knowing what's going on. So, COVID is very different than something like the flu. The flu, the reason, you know, the vaccine comes out and people are like, oh, it's only, you know, 40% effective this year is because you're playing a little bit of a guessing game because flu mutates very fast. COVID mutates much slower, thank God. But it is mutating, right? And you need the ability to track those mutations so that you can, build what we call public health efforts around them, know what's going on in the community, know what our treatments, how our treatments are going to be affected by those variants, know which vaccines are going to work and be able to test that, build new boosters of those vaccines against those variants if we had to. And actually Moderna and Pfizer are both already doing that.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. I knew it was a way too early question, but embedded into the vaccines, obviously.
Yeah, so they are already doing that. And, you know, so they will have kind of the army again, or the tools to fight the variants as well, hopefully soon. So there are a number of variants out there and something we call variants of concern, meaning we're watching them. The one that everybody probably heard of a number of months ago was the variant that came out of the UK. Yeah. And it spreads like wildfire. It spreads very fast and it's more deadly. Right. So we obviously want to pay attention to that. Right. The good news is we know our current vaccines treat it or prevent it, not treat it. I take that back. So we know that the vaccines work for that typical variant. Then you have a few other variants, South Africa, we'll label them by country rather than their scientific names. South African, we have a variant in New York, we have variants in California, we have variants in Brazil. And Atlantic has developed what we call a rapid test to test for these variants, okay? And so this is great news for New Jersey in particular, the Garden State, because it gives us the ability to see what's out in our community and prepare for it, okay? Or know this treatment may work, this treatment may not, because it does have some impact on treatment as well. So right now we're, you can get a turnaround time for these results in hours, so this is pretty unheard of as far as the way we've typically done variant testing. It's a little bit different method to do it. But the typical variant testing you've heard about through like the CDC or the Department of Health, that takes 5 to 7 days, right? That's a long time to, you're already behind the eight ball, right? So this could be game changing. I actually think it will be game changing from a public health perspective.
That's amazing that you're able to turn it around in such a quick time.
Yeah, it really is amazing.
Is it kind of the same, like you said, slightly different method? Is it like PCR type?
It is a PCR, right? So that same type of technology used to test for COVID, it's a similar technology.
Another question someone probably would, if they were listening, might ask is if they're feeling down or sick or whatever. Oh, I want to go get tested for the variant. I've already been like, it's not like that. There's no like standing site for going to get tested right now for this. But it exists and there's a process that goes along with it. Is that right?
Right. So the state, the country, and then of course Atlantic is testing in the background, right? And that's to understand what's going on in your community, the local community, the country, right? But yes, you can't just go and request a variant test. You just get a COVID test, right? Because in all honesty, what you're going to do and how we're going to manage you is not going to be that much different at this point.
So it's kind of, it seems like a huge benefit from an information gathering standpoint in order.
Absolutely.
Yeah, to educate other vaccinations and things like that, therapeutics to solve it. So that's great. Excellent news, like you said, for the Garden State and our region. And I think that's kind of all I had. Like I said earlier, I think a lot of people are focused on the vaccines that are interested in them, talking about them, getting them, but we're still seem to see pretty like quote unquote like high numbers and cases. I mean, is that a concern? And the balance, you said, as you said, we always are going to need testing, at least for now. Community spread is still it's still kind of high in the community. But previously, before the vaccine, you needed to get a test that we were talking about a little earlier to do like very common things. So you're picking up a lot of probably asymptomatic people who are just trying to go to a certain place or whatever the example it is. So how do you like kind of look at the balance between the two? I think you kind of already described it, but is there anything else you might want to add in terms of why we might be seeing still a high number of cases? Are they in a younger population, or anything you can add to that would be, I think, very interesting for people.
Sure. So it's probably due to a few different reasons. So one, why did the rules change? Why do I not have to get screened every 5 minutes when I, go now that I'm vaccinated, right? Like, why has my freedom expanded? Well, one, because that's the point of vaccination, right? It's for our freedoms to expand, right? Like that's a really positive benefit to it. But two, we also have data that it reduces that asymptomatic disease. Again, so you have to balance a bit, and the requirements, if you're going international, actually have not changed as far as testing. So if you're going international, you actually still have to test when you come back. Because of variants, right? And really, variants are the game changer here and why you're still seeing disease. I think it's a couple of fold. So variants are one, because there are a lot of them, especially that UK one that we talked about, they're much more contagious. And it's really becoming the predominant or the main kind of COVID in the community right now, All right. So, and people are letting their guard down. I think people are kind of COVID fatigued as they talk, right? I think we all are, right? That's completely normal human behavior. But that's why I think many of us are just saying, just hold on a little longer, because if we let these variants spread because we've gotten tired, it's like, you don't want to start over, right? So we just kind of have to double down our efforts right now, let enough people get vaccinated so that we can no longer give those variants an opportunity to spread or to develop new variants, right? So we are seeing a different patient population now. We're seeing it in much younger people. We're even seeing it more in kids now, right? So that's not that different than what the experience they had in the UK. Thankfully, we didn't have that steep climb because we already had our vaccine campaign rolled out by the time this variant started to take hold, right? At least in New Jersey. So we are seeing obviously rises, but we're starting to see a fall again. Hopefully that fall continues. But I do think it's a bit of people letting their guard down, a bit of variants, and a bit of the unvaccinated population, you know? So April 19th is a game changer. Everybody is allowed to get vaccinated who's over the age of 16. So that is exciting news. So
you guys ready for that? The floodgates to open on the 19th?
No, I mean, if I have to inject people myself to get us out of the pandemic, I will. I really believe in these vaccines. I'm waiting for probably Pfizer will be the first out for a 12 to 15. And I'm waiting to sign up my son. I have two other kids, unfortunately, that will be quite a while before they're vaccinated because they're younger than 12. But at least I'll get one of them.
So the age is down to 12, is that?
Not yet. So Pfizer just completed their first portion of this study. So they requested to the FDA, I believe last week actually, to review their data so that they can release it. So assuming no complications and the data looks good and, you know, there was not, you know, nothing of concern, I anticipate for kids 12 to 15, you know, sometime maybe in June, I'm hoping.
Very good. That's awesome.
A game changer there too.
Absolutely. So we have some positive stuff to look forward to.
Yeah. You got to look at the positive to keep going.
Exactly. Do you have any last words that you want to leave us with in terms of, I know Dr. Audette was predicting a small ripple last time that maybe was a wavelet instead, but anything else that you want to either just advice or anything. I mean, I think you already said a lot in terms of the data behind the vaccinations and what's going on in the community, a lot of great information. So I really thank you for that. And I appreciate you coming on and talking to us, and hopefully people that are listening or watching can take a lot out of this. And it's a big benefit for the community. So thank you for all of that. We really appreciate it. But is there anything else that you wanted to leave us with?
Sure. So, I mean, I learned early in COVID not to look in my crystal ball because COVID oftentimes outsmarts us. But I think, again, we are in a completely different state than we were a year ago, and we've gotten significantly smarter. We have much better science. We have tools that arm us. And I do hope this helped. I'm positive about the outlook if we kind of keep doing the things that we are supposed to do and people get vaccinated. I think there's still some vaccine hesitancy, meaning people are scared to get it. But that's thankfully also dropping, through the nation. And I think if people are waiting on the sidelines to see if something bad is going to happen, you know, at least on the first two vaccines, we have a ton of data. And even on J&J, we have a ton of data, right? I know this hiccup, but we know our systems work, right? And we have well over 100 million vaccinated people in this country alone. All right. So nobody is first anymore. No, you know, we know we're talking about risks of one in a million and even less in many other things. And the risk of COVID is real. much, much smaller. I mean, much, much higher, I'm sorry, than the risk of any vaccination campaign that we're going to do. So have confidence, you know, and be safe. And I wish everybody well. And thank you for having me on.
Absolutely. It's a good comparison at the end, the risk between a vaccine versus the COVID, COVID complications. It's not comparable. So
not at all.
Anyone on the sidelines is like, well, a vaccine might, you know, potentially they can take a look at the data for themselves and make their own informed decisions. But everything that you provided again was extremely helpful. So thank you again. I really appreciate it. Say hi to Dr. Audette for us as well. You know, I feel like definitely in Summit, the community is very, very connected to Overlook. And so we all appreciate your efforts.
And we appreciate the community's efforts. We really felt that love during our entire first wave and continuous. So thank you to the community as well.
Excellent. Thank you for your time. We appreciate it. Thank you, Doctor.
Bye.
Where the talk is real. Garden State Debate. No joke, no frills. Garden State Debate. It's the talk of the town. Garden State Debate. For people all around, yeah. Garden State Debate.
Garden State Debate.
Garden State Debate.